Hey guys, welcome back to the Love That Lasts podcast. This is Jeff, and we really hope that you're enjoying the show as much as we enjoy creating it. And this week, the Anatomy of Marriage miniseries is back, and we think you guys are going to really dig this episode. So sit back and enjoy.
I was like at my lowest, like I had taken antidepressants and just felt worse, and all I would do was obsess about how awful it is that I'm here, and like I would daydream about like dying.
Today, we're exploring the world of mental health, and I'm not gonna lie, it's pretty heavy.
But it's like when you don't feel valued.
This is a friend of mine sharing her personal experience of what it's like to deal with depression.
You start feeling like everything that you value isn't valuable either. So then you don't like anything anymore, and you just kind of slowly atrophy, and everything, the meaning of everything just kind of like dwindles away. I don't know how to describe it other than like just especially dark, demonic sorts of days. And those days when you're like weeping and curled up in a corner, mm-hmm. I feel like the thing that always haunted me on those days was this: you messed up. You aren't good enough. You can never be good enough. I mean, I was just this, always like this straight A, above 4.0 average kid who like just always was trying to do the right thing, was always like good, sing-songy, happy little kid. Mm-hmm. Never really got into like the typical kind of trouble that teenagers get into. I'd never been drunk. Mm-hmm. I had never smoked a cigarette even. I never did any drugs. So for me, it wasn't ever about like, oh, I made another mistake. Like in that sense, it was like, oh, I forgot to call my grandpa. I'm such a terrible person. But it was weird how much it would like eat me up. And this was one of the things that kept on spiraling me back into it, uh-huh. was that like I didn't feel comfortable saying I have depression, because I felt like I didn't have any good reason to be sad. But I felt sad. Mm-hmm. And the fact mm-hmm. that I felt sad made me feel ashamed. Mm-hmm. And so that I would feel more sad. People who had the same kind of remorse and guilt like I did mm-hmm. over petty things, mm-hmm. you know, culturally we would look at that and be like, that's totally a petty, yeah. stupid thing. But that doesn't change the fact that the feeling is real, mm-hmm. and that you're really walking through something that's really dark. I would have these dark days where it was almost just like a wave just kind of like washed over me and was like, you have to drown today. Sorry. And you don't really like, it wasn't like I was just slowly thinking and spiraling into some dark place. Mm-hmm. It was like, I was just sitting at my desk and all yeah. of a sudden I feel like I'm failing at everything yeah. I ever tried to do. It's a perpetual kind of sadness mm-hmm. where you just constantly feel on the edge of tears.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, I hope nobody talks to me today because I'm going to start crying the second that I have to speak.
I would be interested to see your take on things like how depression affects marriage or even medication, because medication can have crazy side effects and cause a lot of strife in mm-hmm. marriage. So what are your thoughts on that?
Here's Dr. Les and Leslie Parrott again from Seattle Pacific University.
Yeah, I mean, here's one thing we know, and it's just a profound truth, that your marriage can only be as healthy as the least healthy person in the marriage. Mm-hmm. So one of the best gifts you can ever give your marriage is just to focus on who you are, you know, as a person, and getting healthy yourself. That is a huge gift. And when you do that, the tide raises for the whole marriage. Mm-hmm. So when you've got an issue that really impacts your ability to function personally, yeah, I mean, that's a big deal for the relationship.
Yeah, you know, years ago we wrote this book, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. And we recently, after years of research, have released an assessment that's pretty powerful that goes with that. And one of the pages in the assessment, it's called the SIMBUS assessment. If somebody's interested, they can check that out, SIMBUS assessment. But, and SIMBUS stands for Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, S-Y-M-B-I-S. But one of the pages in that report is called Well-Being, and it has all kinds of indicators, self-concept and other things that make up your well-being, but also caution flags. And there's about 25 potential caution flags, things like depression, things like addiction, things like eating disorders, and any kind of pathology. And, you know, why would that be on a marriage, you know, assessment? Because of the very thing that Leslie's talking about. Your marriage can only be as healthy as the least healthy person in it. Mm-hmm. And so you want to work on that. That's not an isolated individual problem. That's a marriage problem. Right. And it's now part of a system that we've got to figure out together. And that means managing perhaps medication. But that's all part and parcel of the relationship.
And one thing we know, I mean, and we know this from our work with literally thousands of couples, every good marriage eventually bumps into something bad.
I was like at my lowest, like I had taken antidepressants and just felt worse. And
here's me and Seth in the car again.
I felt so hopeless and had two little kids to take care of, and you were just at work all day, and all I would do was like obsess about how awful it is that I'm here, and like I would daydream about like dying, and I just was really depressed, like clinically. But like I said, the medication like made me way worse. It made me like crazy. It made me hurt you. It made me...
Did you have any like really trippy side effects or like...
Yeah, insanity.
Really dark, I mean, thoughts
the,
or...
Yeah, I... The... When I started taking the medication is when it was like, it just ramped my anger up to a place that it, I mean, I was already afraid of myself and it just made it 10 times worse, right? And so I just stopped taking it.
I remember one time, I think we were living in that rental house up there and we had had a fight and you had left, I think, but then you came back and like, pulled up in the gravel driveway really fast and you like slammed on your brakes and all this gravel went flying, and then you got like a mason jar or something and then you busted it on the concrete patio and you were yelling at me from outside. I was like at the window and I think you were like trying to get glass to cut yourself.
All of the medicine that I've tried to take to make myself a more chipper person, like that you're saying you would kind of prefer, makes me feel worse.
No, I'm not saying that. And
you have this whole conversation.
I've only taken one medicine ever prescribed by the doctor, so it's not like you've tried to, I'm not even saying, like you're making it sound like, oh yeah, I can't find a prescription that works for me. It's like, I remember you tried antidepressants like 6 years ago, and they made you feel weird, and that's all.
Again, like, why are you so callous?
I'm not callous, Melanie, but you're just making... Well, I'm sorry if I'm callous.
Like, I am saying, I'm fine for myself. I like who I am, and I don't try to be mean, and I don't try to be rude and cold. I try to be super happy, and you make me feel like I'm intentionally trying to like screw everybody over, and I just don't get it, and I don't even care that I don't get it. That's how you make me feel. And I'm telling you, for all of the things that I am not doing right, and I'm openly admitting I'm not doing right, I'm willing to work on all of them, and you're just like, whatever, like, how many prescription medications have you tried? One, 6 years ago. Like, you're such a jerk about it. What kind of response is that?
When we were going through everything, terrible, and I was really struggling with like coping with it. Here's me, Seth, and Matt again. I feel like I commandeered our marriage. Like I just took it by the throat and was like, whatever I do, you're going to do it too. Because I just I couldn't not do that.
Right.
But not unknowingly, you know? Like, mm-hmm. So if you have a spouse that hates to go out to eat or hates to go anywhere in public, they will shape
everything you do as a couple, because right. you're either going to drag them to public places and they're going to hate it, or you're going to stay home all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, the easygoing qualities don't win out.
Yes.
Or is a way to think of that, at least. If mm-hmm. if one person is easygoing, their will not be imposed as. You won't find the other person go, well, I guess I have to be easygoing now. That's not how a not easygoing person would do. So then you're only left to be really responsive to the negative elements or the sick or mental illness. You are almost only left to be responsive to it. So mm-hmm. turmoil requires response.
I remember there was one night when I was like in crisis mode, yes, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever talked about that before.
Well, first of all, before you say the story, this is something that struck me about this concept, is that whenever you would give up, I wouldn't. And right. it was like a total shift, like a complete, like I would stop being insane
right.
if you were being insane. Mm-hmm. And so, and the same thing would happen if I was being insane, you would stop being insane, but you just had that a whole lot longer than I did. You held on to the sanity side of things.
And it was super late at night, 2 a.m. or something like that, and you had told me that you had talked to your sister that day and you were leaving. And I was like, what? And I was just, my core was like, I can't let that happen. Not in a weird, abusive, protective way. I was like, no, this can't happen, right? So you had told me that, and we argued about it. And then you were like, F you, I'm going to bed. And you went into our spare bedroom and locked the door. And I was like, she's going to get up in the middle of the night and take the kids and leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you had gone into the spare bedroom and locked the door, and I was like, okay, she's going to leave. I'm going to fall asleep, and I'll have no kids and no wife. This can't happen. So I broke the door down, and I was like, please don't go. Please don't go. You can't, right? And like, it was just kind of a really quiet, somber moment. I was like, please don't go. And you said, no, I'm leaving, you know, I'm out of here. And then I had a true kind of like mental breakdown, which I never thought I'd be the type of person that would happen to, you know, like, oh, well, you know, strong people don't do that. You keep calm and carry on. So I started punching myself in the face, like as hard as I could, like, and it was, I guess it's symbolic of like being in a fight with yourself. Like, I didn't care. There was no pain. There was nothing. Like, I remember I had like knots on my face the next morning because I was hitting myself so hard, right? And you were like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And you got really, really amped up, and the adrenaline just kind of went, you know, at that point I was like too far gone almost, and just kept on hitting myself in the face. You were like, stop, stop. You were yelling. And then like I stopped, and then I think I started crying and like hyperventilating, and then I opened the broken door and then started hitting my head on the wall, right? Just like, no, no. And like, wow. it busted the wall, in fact, but it was just like my forehead. It was a adrenaline fueled crisis, and so I just was hitting my head against the drywall, right? Busting it up. And then I was hoping to hit the corner of the wall so I could really like split my head, right? I remember that. I was
you
like,
thought that?
Yeah, I was like, I didn't.
Can
I
you
didn't
remember
care.
What your goal was? Was it to prove to Melanie that you?
No. No, it wasn't. It was like
you
I
just
was
wanted to hurt yourself.
You wanted to be hurt. Do you
no,
feel like you
I,
deserved
I didn't, I,
to be hurt?
No, it wasn't a self-deprecating kind of thing. It was I was mad, I guess, and just didn't care. It was like, you know, oftentimes in people who cut, you know, cutters do that so they don't feel the real pain, right?
Uh-huh.
So it was probably somewhere
probably around, more in the line of that
along that line, right? So it was kind of a break in reality. I don't care.
It was
right?
consistent with other self-harm practices,
right? And then Melanie was just like, stop, 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 and I was like crying the whole time. And then I like walked fast in the laundry room, and you were there, and I just like fell down. I remember I put my back against the dryer and just slumped down, like all that energy, all that everything just kind of like melted down in the floor, and I was just sobbing. And then I punched the tile floor, and I think I cracked my hand too. I never went to the doctor or anything, but it still hurts actually today. I cracked my hand and did it again, and I think I did it again, and Melanie was like, stop, and then she hugged me, and I remember just sobbing and saying, why do you care? Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't talking about, you know, why are you going to leave? Why are you anything? I was like, in my most crazy that I've ever felt on the inside, me, Seth Studley, thinking I can handle this, do this, be strong and very independent. In my most crazy, I was like, why are you hugging me? How can you do that? How can you, like, not hate me even more and think I'm like, what a failure? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of really illustrative to me, and I had insights into myself. And like you, I think you in that moment were a light, for lack of a better word, a light to me, saying, okay, this is the one of the most examples of love, right? You're not judging me. You're loving me. You're stronger than I am right now. Mm-hmm. You know? So just that whole story, you know, was just like, and you didn't leave the next morning. Mm-hmm. You stayed, and we continued to talk it through.
No, kind of going back, I remember coming home and you had thrown literally everything that was inside the house, and maybe even outside the house, you had thrown it into a giant pile in a room, in one of our rooms, and everything, clothes, books, keepsakes, stuff, like every single thing was in a pile. And I'm not sure why you did that. It's not like you were yelling at me to get out or anything. It was just, you took everything I owned and put it in a pile. And I remember your mom talking to me, and, you know, we were just both looking at the pile in the middle of this room, and she said, that's a lot of hurt right there. And I agreed with her.
At that time, I remember thinking, when he sees how terrible I will treat him, he will leave me and I will not look like the bad guy. Mm. I can say, Seth left me, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to show you like my ultimate worst, essentially. But then what happened was you stayed.
Mm.
And I went, he really loves me. If right. he'll stay when I do that, he really loves me. Mm-hmm. And then when you went insane, and like, I mean, it was terrifying because you're so much stronger than me. And you were like you broke the door down. You smashed a hole in the wall with your forehead. I mean, you were punching the tile. And I remember thinking they were going to break because it just mm-hmm. was like, you look like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart only wanted you to stop because I love you so much.
Mm.
So my immediate reaction was not, he's crazy, get away from him. I was like, I need to help him stop because I love him.
Right.
I was in this space of, I feel so terrible. Everything is terrible. I'm depressed. I just had a baby. My husband lied to me, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I was running the show
mm-hmm.
with my depression
mm-hmm.
until I heard Joyce Meyer's sermon where she talked about, very specifically, like, you can run the show the wrong way and people are not going to know how to tell you to stop. So tell yourself to stop. And mm-hmm. I'm not in any way suggesting that you can stop depression, like
right.
a light, you know, like turn the faucet off. But there is an element of self-responsibility in that.
How you treat other people is still your responsibility. I mean, you had plenty of reasons. I mean, you had all the excuses in the world to justify any behavior you wanted to do or chose to do or responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, you had every possible, like, your behavior and how you treated somebody or Seth is just a result of the situation you were in from your point of view.
And yeah.
She pointed to you that it was not. You're still, none. However you feel, whatever your situation is, you're still responsible for how you treat other people.
Yeah. That's a really weird, that just like totally felt like something I've never heard in my entire life. Like the way you said it, feel it changes it, because why would the way we feel influence the way we treat people?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Because it is true. We all do it. If we had a bad day, we flip a bird off.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, we shoot a bird at the guy, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like we take the things that we feel and put them onto other people. And we do absolutely not need to do that.
And well, yeah. And family systems even worse, because the people you're around them, I mean, even if your situational problems are other people's fault, you still are going to take it out on the people that you're most around, spouse, kids, family. They're the people that you're around and comfortable enough with. So, you know, it's just, you feel justified in being a jerk if your boss is mean to you all day.
Yeah.
Then you thus have less barrier to being a jerk to your husband when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
If you're depressed,
right?
You know, you and this happened, and your kids are screaming, and your husband has looked at porn. Well, you now have license to do almost anything without still being the bad guy there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really weird thought.
I mean, that's just how it is.
Here's Les and Leslie Parrott again.
You will have a time of depression or crisis, or you know. Whether it's financial debt or infertility or something that rocks your world as a couple. And it's not the fault of the couple. In fact, one of the things we know about couples who are resilient in the face of that kind of a thing is that they don't look for someone to blame, you know. What they do is share the ownership of what can we do together to repair. And that's huge. And they don't lose hope. And it's really hard to make those kind of choices. But what we found for couples that do face something really tough like that, and in the face of that, make choices that they find on the other side of that, their marriage is so amazing for them that they wouldn't trade it for the world. It's like, I love you more, not in spite of what we went through, but because we walked that journey together. And so it turns into a gift, not to make it trite, but when you find the capacity as a couple to adjust to things outside of your control, it's one of the most amazing gifts you can give each
other. It turns into a shared experience. So, you know, one partner's depression or whatever isn't just theirs. Like when they have a partner, then it's ours experience. And I think like the super difficult things that we went through, some were my issues, some were her issues, but it was a mutual, I think, acceptance, almost like an unspoken acceptance, like, hey, we're going to get through this. I'm here for you. I know you're here for me. Boom. And now we're kind of sitting or basking in the glory of like, yeah, we have a shared experience and we're much stronger for that.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. It gives you that baseline of confidence as a couple. First of all, I know you're not going to abandon me when I have some hard thing emerge, and you're not going to blame me. Instead, you're going to say, we're in this together. Let's own it and let's solve it.
Whenever you would give up, I wouldn't. And the same thing would happen if I was being insane. You would stop being insane.
Well, hold on. Let me interject. Like, that makes me kind of really happy to even hear you say that right now, because it makes me think, like, because throughout this podcast, I'm like, okay, fundamentally, you know, Matt and all my other friends didn't think that we were going to make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you've correct, said that before. And I often, every time I hear you or Toby or whoever say that, I'm like, why did we make it, right? Like, what was the kind of like underlying thing of why, you know, why in the world did you and I work? And it's really beautiful to hear you say, like, we both held on when the other one couldn't, you know? Mm-hmm. And that almost makes me kind of get choked up inside a little bit, because it's like, if you really think about it, at the core level of what marriage is, it's like two people coming together. One person works harder when the other one can't, and we're both for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm for you, you're for me, right? No matter what.
Mm-hmm. So I've been pretty quiet this entire episode, but it's very much on purpose. I think this part of our story tells itself through what we shared with our producer, Matt, what my friend shares about depression, and what Dr. Les and Leslie Parrott share about mental health and marriage. But there's this one thing that Seth said that really stands out to me, so I'm going to play a little part of the clip again and tell you what I mean.
one person works harder when the other one can't.
Have you ever seen those inspirational marriage quotes that say things like, marriage isn't 50-50, it's 100-100? Or even worse, divorce is 50-50, but marriage is 100-100? You've seen those things, right? Well, for some reason, those really rub me the wrong way, and I'll tell you why. But it's gonna start with a story that feels like a detour, so hang in there. So you all know that I had my appendix removed not that long ago, but let me tell you what it was like when I woke up from surgery. I'm groggy, right? I feel super disoriented, and I'm in this strange sort of holding room where there are rows of empty hospital beds and hushed voices around the corners, and I'm really cold. An older nurse who's standing on the left side of my bed with blonde hair is asking me a bunch of questions that, honestly, I can't really keep up with, but I try. And Seth is standing on the right side of my hospital bed, holding my hand and looking worried and pretty uncomfortable at the same time. The nurse keeps talking and asking me how I'm feeling, and then she starts to tell me that the surgery went a little different than they had planned. Then, the surgeon walks over, and he tells me that my appendix didn't rupture, and that's a good thing, but the scar that I've had from getting my spleen removed when I was 10 had actually fused my abdominal wall to my intestines, and so he had to do a little extra work while he was in there. Then he begins to dig around in my blankets and in my hospital gown, and he reveals to me that there is a drain protruding from an incision about 2.5 inches below my belly button. A drain. It was in that moment, and in the days that followed, that I realized that that saying that marriage is 50-50 or even 100-100 is just ridiculous. In fact, it feels foolish to me. I mean, you can like that saying if you want, that's fine. I get what it's trying to say, but it's so unrealistic that I can't really embrace it. To me, those percentages or numbers should be fluctuating constantly. I mean, in that hospital room, I was giving Seth 0%. And you know we have 3 kids, so he certainly was not giving me 100%. He was probably giving me about 75% of himself, which is really wonderful. But I think the idea that our spouse should be able to give 100% of themselves to us all of the time, or even part of the time, is pretty ridiculous. And this notion can become downright damaging. If one spouse is dealing with any type of mental health or physical health issue, it just isn't possible. And ideally in those times, like in our story, the spouse that needs more can get more. And the spouse that has more to give can give more. And then the pendulum will swing back to the other side and so on. It's a dance, a rhythm. And maybe some days I give Seth 20% and he gives me 80%. And then the next day I give him 90% and he gives me 10%. But the very idea that we should be giving our spouse 100% every day or even 50% feels like a rule that has the potential to set us up for failure, disappointment, or both. And you might be wondering why I shared this story for the mental health episode, but honestly, healing from depression felt an awful lot like healing from an appendectomy. It took forever. And on the days that I thought I was totally fine, something would happen that would set me back a month and I would feel like crap again. But with a surgery, it's easy to see that I'm wounded. I have scars, I have bandages, I take medicine. But when it's a mental health issue, it's not that clear. It isn't apparent on the outside that something might be wrong on the inside. So when I thought of this episode, this story kept coming into my head over and over again, so I'm not gonna ignore it. My friend from earlier in the episode, who suffers with depression, shared her thoughts about the process of getting help or reaching out.
You need to, like, press on. There's a moment when the wave is swelling over you. You can see it. You know it's gonna hit you and affect you anyway. Uh-huh. But there's a moment in there where you can choose to reach out for help, call a friend, mm-hmm. let somebody walk with you through it, or succumb to it and continue to feel like just let it wash over you, mm-hmm. go hide somewhere.
I shared with my friend that in my own struggle with depression, I had sometimes actually chose the depression instead of healing because I was more familiar with it.
Yeah, no, it's true. You do choose it. Mm-hmm. But it also chooses you.
The biggest thing that I'm learning in this episode honestly harkens back to last week where we talked about identity. If I had just understood myself better and understood that mental health impacts people just as much, if not more, than physical health, I would have been easier on myself, easier on Seth.
I would have had more patience and hope to understand that just because I feel something and think something does not make it true, and most certainly does not mean I will feel or think that thing forever. And I want to make it really clear here that Seth and I did not go through these mental health struggles alone. We went to counseling, I sought medical help, and we were involved with various groups in our church that helped us out a ton. Also, my mom, my sister Carrie, and my friend Allie were all extremely instrumental in the healing process. If you're going through something right now and you're in need of help, I hope that you will reach out to someone safe. And if you're ever in crisis, please call the Crisis Call Center at 1-800-273-8255.
Our show is produced by Matt Carter, edited and sound designed by Melanie Steadley. Special thanks to executive producer Craig Gross and StrongerMarriages.com.
Next week, Alyssa and I will be back at our kitchen table talking about faith, culture, and answering your questions. So see you then.